This episode of Fireside Chat is brought to you by Robert Woodward, lawyer at Altidore Law. He specializes in family law, wills, and estates for Flame fans in Calgary and Southern Alberta. Call Robert at 403-771-2187 and mention Fireside Chat to get $100 off any legal service.
Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
Happy New Year. I'm Dan, as always, alongside Matt, and we are back. It's been 10 games since we've talked last for the Flames, and lots has happened. Matt, how's 2019 treating you so far?
Well, other than a minor leak in my house, other than that, it's been fairly decent, and it's been good to see the Flames get back on their feet after a little bit of a struggle towards the end of the 2018 calendar year.
When we first started talking about this season back in, I guess, July and August over the summer, I would not have expected the Flames to be number one in the West and really tied for second in the NHL coming into the 2019 half of the season. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I was figuring that they had a good chance to be one of the better teams, like especially when the Lindholm trade happened. I was figuring that that was going to help cement the team as being one of the upper class teams, but I was thinking like in the seventh to maybe fourth overall range, not second, but you know, that's always good. And frankly, you know, if it wasn't for Mike Smith's struggles through the year, like we could have 8, 10, 12 more points in the standings just on games where he gave up bad goals, so we could be right up there with Tampa Bay at this point of the season.
Well, we're number one in the West. I'll take that. So since we talked last, the Flames have played 10 games. We won't talk a whole lot about these, but just to run them down. On December 18th, the Flames lost 2-0 to the Dallas Stars. On the 20th, they lost 5-4 against the Tampa Bay Lightning. This is probably a game worth having a little bit of discussion. We all talked about how this game would really set the bar for where the Flames are as a team, and I thought we got a really good game out of these guys. I said on our last show, we didn't necessarily have to win this game, in my opinion. We just had to compete, and that's exactly what we did.
Yeah, it was a shootout loss, and frankly, the team played well, and they easily, if the bounces had gone their way, could have got 2 points, but unfortunately the bounces didn't go their way. And
fun game to watch, though.
Oh, definitely. It was one of the more entertaining games. And it's a preview of this year's Stanley Cup final.
I was about to say, Matt, is this a preview of the finals?
Yeah, well, we rematched with Montreal after 86, then in 89 and won the Cup. So it makes sense that Tampa Bay, Calgary, rematch of 04 with the right guys winning this time.
If we're going to do that, though, can we make sure the refs know what's in and what's out?
Just make sure that Sam Bennett does not shoot the puck on net at all. He keeps getting every goal he attempts taken away, so just, you know, you just don't shoot, just pass. Always,
well, Bennett,
just pass.
Bennett actually opened Flames scoring in this one.
True enough, but so many of his goals get waved off.
Calgary played one more game before they took a bit of a break for Christmas, and this one, you could tell that they were looking forward to Christmas already, losing to the worst team in the West, a 3-1 loss against the St. Louis Blues. Took a couple days for Christmas, had a short road swing up to Winnipeg, where we handedly beat the Jets 4-1. This was a fun game. I know my family was sitting around watching this after Christmas. A good game to get things going again. The Flames on the 29th lost to the Canucks 3-2. The 31st, the New Year's Eve game, always a fun game. The Flames scored a ton of goals, an 8-5 win over the Sharks. I've said this before this season. When you score 8, you should win, but when you get 5 scored on you, you should probably also lose. So this is one of those weird games that you're happy you won, but when you're getting 5 on your own net, you should probably lose.
Yeah. Very reminiscent of that Columbus game.
Exactly.
From earlier in the month. And Calgary had a weird month of December where they had games where they scored 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 goals in a game.
We're going for 10.
That's the New Year's resolution. We want 10.
Mind you, St. Louis beat us. So I don't know who we're going to get 10 against, but...
Do we play Florida or something like that?
We do, this month.
Well, there you go.
We actually play Florida this week.
Oh, excellent.
The Flames opened 2019 with a game in Detroit against Detroit where they won 5-3 over the Red Wings. They had a rematch of the China series on the 3rd as a back-to-back game, a 6-4 loss to Boston. Next game was on the 5th against Philly, a 3-2 win. And as you and I are recording this, the Flames are currently down 2-1 in the second period against Chicago. Oh, take a breath now. That's a lot of hockey, man.
Yeah, just a couple of games in the last 2.5 weeks.
Well, something interesting to note, if we look at that Philly game, so between the San Jose, Detroit, Boston, Philly, that's Calgary's 4th game in 4.5 days, essentially 4 games in 109 hours. That looks more like a Major League Baseball schedule than an NHL schedule.
Well, that is an NHL record for fastest turnaround for 4 games, and just an absolutely ridiculous schedule that the Flames had to endure there.
How much of this do you think has to do with the bye week? I mean, we see the teams are losing a week. If you were to look, that's really the teams, let's say, play 3 games on average. That's 3 games over a week that the team lost.
Yeah, exactly. And you can, if you inserted a day here and there, like it makes stretches like that not happen. But unfortunately, the NHLPA likes the bye week. And frankly, it's a really bad idea just due to the fact that it makes like every month, basically every other day.
The other thing, I think we're fortunate looking at that kind of schedule, is we had no injuries. I mean, when you're playing 4 games in essentially 4.5 days, you're expecting somebody to get hurt on a game schedule like that. And I think we're fortunate we're coming off this road trip so far, at least. We got to get through the Chicago game, but pretty much injury free.
Yeah, and like the Flames were lucky that they actually came out of that 4-game stretch going 3-1. And they should have won the 4th one, too, if not for Mike Smith.
And then for the rest of the month, save for 1 game at Edmonton, which is a pretty quick road trip, the Flames are at home. So that'll get them back in their own beds for a little bit, which is nice.
Yeah, and hopefully they can go on a bit of a run.
So with those games kind of behind us, I don't think there's probably a lot to talk about there.
No, we lost all the bad teams, and we actually showed up for the games against the good ones, and... That was a bit of a worrying sign, because the Flames seemed, throughout this season, any of the also-ran type teams, they tend to take them a little not seriously. Like, even though like they're bad in the standings, all of those teams have good players, and the Flames just kind of take it easy, thinking, oh, well, these guys clearly suck, so we don't need to actually worry. Yeah, well, you look at like the Detroit game, they got down 2-0 early before pulling their head out of their behind in the second period, and like it was going to be another one of those type of games that they managed to salvage. And even the Philly game, they weren't their best throughout the contest, and thus far against Chicago, they're not doing very good. Even though Chicago is frankly terrible.
Well, I have to wonder how much of that is the team not showing up for bad teams, or if that's just the grueling effect of this road trip.
It's probably a little bit of A and a little bit of B, but the fact that they're able to beat the good teams when they do play them shows that like they tend to take their foot off the gas a bit when they're playing the lesser teams. And sometimes they're able to still collect 2 points like they did against Detroit and Philadelphia. It's just that you can't have that consistently happen and be an actual contender for the cup, because of the fact that you need to have that killer instinct where you can just roll over teams and just absolutely destroy them. And we're not seeing that very much against the lesser teams. Yet the good teams, where the Flames seem to be really good at controlling the game and... frankly beating them.
Well, in the end, if we're in the playoffs, we'll be playing the good teams.
True, but you also have to realize that all of the bad teams, they're using Calgary as a measuring stick, and they're going to be playing their A games from now on, so because the Flames are the best in the West, and you always wanted to make sure where you're at when you're playing those type of teams. And Calgary's not going to be getting any easy games from the rest for the rest of the season because of that. And the Flames have to adapt to the fact that even though certain teams are bad, they can still beat you.
Yeah, they can beat you, but I think there's also the question of how much energy are they worth expending. Like, yeah, they're bad, but especially if it's a bad Eastern team like Detroit, how badly do we really want that win? Like, you know, do we need to go balls to the wall and maybe hurt somebody or really, you know, tire our guys out, especially when we have three more games and pretty much in every other and every other day configuration on the road trip? At some point, do you just kind of say, well, we just got to get through this one?
True enough.
It's a different if it's team in the West, but if you look at this road trip, I mean, after New Year's, they really have all played Eastern teams. It's Detroit, Boston, Philly. Like, none of those teams are really going to have much of an impact on our standings.
True enough.
So you can't go balls to the wall for 82 games. That's how guys get hurt.
Oh, no. It's just that the Flames need to be mindful of not getting complacent. That's all.
I think from what we've seen is they'll be fine. I mean, the trend shows that after a couple of games of maybe not playing the way they should, they always come back. At least this season.
Oh, I know. Not like last year where, okay, and we're done.
Well, you and I have talked about that, right? We've yet to see the big seven-game losing streak or the big really seven-game winning streak. The Flames are just kind of, you know, playing steady hockey. And you look at any team, even look at, you know, Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay hasn't won them all. Like, everybody's going to lose. I bet if we look, Tampa Bay's even lost to some bad teams.
Oh, I know. Especially over the next couple months, the Flames are playing almost entirely bad teams. They just need to make sure that they're playing well enough where they'll actually get points in those games.
And again, lots of Eastern teams here, so if there's, you know, if they do struggle a little bit, it's not going to hurt them all that much, as long as they can beat the Western opponents. Well, Matt, 7 weeks till the trade deadline. Can you believe it? When that calendar changes over, we can start looking ahead to the trade deadline already.
Oh, I know. The most fun time of year when you're actually a contender.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting when you're not a contender to see what you're going to end up selling and what you can get for it. But when you're a contender, it's like, hey, what can we bring in? But as I've said many times on the show, to get something, we're going to have to give something. And I guess the big question is, what do we need and what are we willing to give up for that thing? I mean, there's been some rumors that Treliving's looking to shop for maybe a veteran defenseman, depth defenseman. My whole issue is I don't know what I want to give up to bring anything in. I don't know I want to give up a lot for rentals, and we've given up so many draft picks over the last couple of years. I think we need to keep our first and second rounders this year. What are your thoughts? What would you be shopping for?
Well, I think the Flames need three things. One is a middle six winger of some sort. Just somebody decent, not anything great. Just another guy in the same caliber as Bennett. Type of thing, or Neil, just another option, somewhat decent. A left-handed defenseman for the third pairing, just because having two rookies in the playoffs and both Valimaki and Shillington have looked a little iffy defensively, and obviously a goaltender to replace Mike Smith.
I think that a forward of the quality that you're looking for, I think is going to cost more than I'd want to give up.
Not necessarily. Like, in terms of rentals, like, for unrestricted free agent forwards, it's not more than a second round pick, and that's if you're talking about a good one.
Well, let's take a look at some UFA forwards here to see if there's anyone that strikes your fancy. I'm looking at the list here.
I'm going to come up with one name right off the top that I think would be perfect, and that's Gustav Nyquist.
Yeah, and I think Nyquist is a guy that if the Flames wanted to, they could probably get a longer term deal done. I don't know if they'd have the room to.
Oh yeah, they could. Nyquist would probably be in the same bracket as Backlund, $4.5-5 million. And if the Flames get rid of Frolik or Stone, they could easily afford that.
I think that if they really want to make a splash, again, they'd have to give up a significant return, but I could see this team, if they really want to make a splash, going out and doing something big for Wayne Simmonds.
That's possible. I think that other teams might be willing to spend more.
You're right. I think the price on Simmonds is going to be high.
Yeah, like I think that with Simmons, you're talking a first plus a really good prospect.
I think a guy like Teravainen is the same, especially because he's so young.
I would probably say a little less on him than Simmons. I think you're talking more like either a really good prospect or a late first.
What about a veteran guy like a Michael Raffle?
That would be all right if he's cheap, but I wouldn't be, yeah, that'd be like, okay, sure, you know.
Another guy that if they're looking for sort of middle six, I'd almost look at Ryan Dzingel out of Ottawa as well. He can play all three forward positions.
That wouldn't be bad, but I think Ottawa might be wanting to sell him for more than what the Flames would be willing to pay.
Call Carolina and get Ferland back?
I really don't want Ferland back at all. I think that boat has sailed. I think that, especially because he had another concussion, like,
I was joking. I don't want to see him back either.
Yeah, like, I like Ferland a lot. It's just that, yeah.
If you want to go the route of acquiring a middle six guy, looking at this list here, I think the cheapest acquisitions that the Flames could probably bring in that would work for what the position you're talking about would either be Jonas Donskoy out of San Jose, but they're not going to trade him, or Joel Armia out of Montreal. I could see him fitting in well as a middle six guy.
Yeah, that would be a possibility.
He's played with Winnipeg. I think he went deep in the playoffs with Winnipeg, so he knows what's expected there.
Yeah, I think for Armia, you're looking at like either a second or a third and a all right prospect.
And then you could even, if you want to get someone a little more expensive who might fit in there, I mean, you could go more with the veteran route of a Justin Williams or, even an Eric Staal if you really wanted to go that way.
Williams would be a very good addition as well, especially because he's such a good playoff guy.
Yeah.
Like game sevens, he's worth two goals each time, so.
See, the guy I could see the Flames going after, but he has a no-trade clause, and I don't think they would move him, is Marcus Kruger.
Yeah, I could see that too.
And then you were mentioning a, you know, sort of a bottom six defenseman, and I know what you're going for there, but I also wonder, with two options in both having Juuso Välimäki and Oliver Shillington, is it really worth giving up an asset for a guy that really wouldn't be much better than those guys?
Well, there's one player, and I'm going to go back to the same team, and that's the Detroit Red Wings, Nicholas Cronwall. I don't think it'd take more than the third round pick to get Cronwall, but that guy hits like a freaking truck. And the Flames don't really have a good hitter on the team from the back end. Like, Giordano picks his spots, and Hamonic picks his spots, but Cronwall's won the Cup before. Very solid guy, very dependable. Being a third line guy, and he can hit like that, especially when games get physical in the playoffs, I think that would be far more valuable than, you know, not getting that kind of an asset. But he'll probably be expensive, though.
Well, that's my thing. I think there's a lot of teams that might be interested. I don't think, with the bidding war that we usually see and the prices we see at the deadline, I don't know if I'd want to pay those prices.
I'd even be willing to do a second for Cronwall. That's how I think that, like, that sounds ridiculous, but we could use that kind of a tough player on the blue line for the playoff run, at least. And with his age, I think the Flames could end up re-signing him for like 2.5 as well if we wanted to.
But I don't think there's any room on the blue line to re-sign him. You know, I think if you're going to get a guy for the playoff run, if you believe these kids that we have are ready, or at least one of them is ready, you got no room. You'd have to move out a Brody or a Hamonic in order to bring Cronwall in, and I'm not sure they'd want to do that.
I know. It's so hard when you actually have a good team that, like, oh, I'd like to get this player or that player, and then, oh, yeah, we don't have any room because, boy, are we so deep.
I mean, if I'm looking at defensemen that can hit, I'd be looking at guys, maybe cheaper guys like Jordy Benn or even a Jake McCabe, who you might be able to get for a lot cheaper. Both guys are making less than $2 million. Not guys you'd expect to re-sign, but sort of like the Nick Shore deal or the Chris Stewart deal, where you bring him in, you sit him in the press box for most of the time, and then you let him go in the summer. Like, they play a certain role, and that's what they're here for. I know the guy that I would say to bring in there, but they're in a playoff position themselves, would be Brooks Orpik if you want a hitting defenseman, but Washington's not going to trade him to Calgary because they're both in playoff spots. But yeah, I think if you're looking for that guy, I think he can be acquired cheaper. But to me, I'm not convinced it's worth paying the price for the defenseman that we have. We've also had really good success this year with some of our call-ups, guys like Quine. And I'm almost thinking that if the price is any more than about a third, I'd take the gamble of using one of our farm guys than going out and acquiring a forward for 2 months.
Well, the thing is that I think that the Flames, especially because of our division, it's kind of on the weaker side, that the Flames have a very decent chance of going all the way to the finals just due to how the playoff format is. And, you know, do you want to cheap out and not possibly win the cup just because, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard because, like, we're not used to being in this position where...
But if you look at this, if you look at the way this roster is built too, it's not like it's this year or we're out.
True.
You know, let's say we, as you say, cheap out. You might say, okay, next year let's make a couple changes. Maybe let's bring in a veteran guy in the summer, and I think we can make a better run the year after that. Like, I don't think it's a one and done this season.
I don't either, but I think that the Flames could be in a position where, like, we're like this decade's Chicago or LA, where...
I don't know if I'd go as far as Chicago.
Well, Monahan and Gaudreau, Kazatane...
Remember the thing with Chicago, though, was every summer they had to trade away some of their key players because they couldn't afford them.
Yeah, but, you know, Trill Living smart and got everybody on long-term deals for nothing. You know, Lindholm making $5 million for 5 years. Hannafin's making $5 million for 5 years.
Neil's making almost six for 5 years.
Well, you got to have one bad contract in there.
It's like a rule, right? You can't step on the ice unless your team has its obligatory bad contract. Bettman's gonna call and say, hey, you don't have a bad contract, can I interest you in one of these other ones?
No. Future Phoenix Coyote James Neal.
Going back to the Flames, though, the other thing that you were talking about, and I think we all agree on, and we asked fans for some thoughts this week on Twitter, and everybody mentioned the Flames probably need to do something with their goaltending. Mike Smith, every game he's playing, looks like, eh, maybe his time as an NHL goalie is over.
Yeah, honestly, like, after that last game against Boston and how he was kind of bad against Detroit, I would rather have John Gillies be the backup. You know, we're in January now. We have the book. Smith's not an NHL goaltender. And it's unfortunate, but it is what it is. And so the Flames need a goaltender.
If we're going to spend assets at the deadline, I would rather the Flames, because there's not a lot I'm willing to move, I'd rather the Flames kind of use all their assets to get a goalie first and then deal from whatever's left. I would hate for them to bring in a depth defenseman that's like, we're out of tradable assets.
Yeah. Well, the Flames do have plenty of tradable assets. It just depends on what you're looking at.
Well, for a rental goalie, not many I want to give up.
John Gillies.
I don't think Gillies by himself, though, gets you much better, right? You're not going to say, oh, let's take Gillies for, you know, Varlamov or Howard or somebody like that. Like, I think Gillies and something maybe, but Gillies by himself is not that valuable. This is a guy who can't even stay healthy.
Well, here's a question for you. What about trading Michael Frolik to Edmonton for Cam Talbot?
There's two parts of me. One part of me loves the fact, and I know we screwed it up already, but the fact that Calgary and Edmonton never trade. We made some stupid trades. We brought in Smead and, you know, crap like that, but I don't know. I think for me, Talbot's a guy I'd go to in the summer. I don't know I would trade for him now.
If the price was right,
I just think that Talbot's going to be one of the more desirable goalies available if Edmonton makes him available, and I think the price will be too high. That's why I wouldn't trade for him now. I mean, look around the league at the top goalies. Bobrovsky's not going anywhere.
No.
Varlamov's not going anywhere.
No.
Howard could probably move.
Talbot and Howard would probably be my 1-2 for most optimal choice for a pickup.
Now, I mean, if you want to do a Gustav Nyquist deal, which you talked about earlier, you could do even money Smith for Howard, throw in a couple extra pieces like Smith, Frolik, and Mangiapane, and you could probably get Howard and Nyquist for that.
Yeah. Well, we'd probably have to throw in like either a first or something, or, you know, a second or a good other good player like Dubé or something, because Nyquist is fairly decent. But, you know, there is a workaround with that, and it's possible. Like, if you went like big deal, you could go with Detroit and go Nyquist, Cronwall, and Howard. They'd have to retain some money on one of them, and Frolik, Smith, plus a handful of goodies.
The other thing you have to be careful of, too, is this roster's working. If we make too many trades to it, we don't know what that's going to do to the chemistry of this team.
True. But if you did go one-stop shopping, then at least the three guys are familiar with each other.
Yeah, I don't know that they want to go that far, though. A couple other names here that I've been looking at. So I think, now, let me put this scenario out. To me, we're not looking for a number one. To me, no. Riddick is the best we're going to get this season for the price we can pay, but we're looking for either a 1B or a backup, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah.
What would you think about trying to go to the Capitals and get Phoenix Copley?
That'd be okay, but I doubt that they'd be really interested in moving him.
I think that a lot of people, and you and I even talked about him earlier, Keith Kincaid from the Devils has some experience there, but I bet the Devils want to retain him.
Yeah, I think that they'd be more likely to trade Schneider than Kincaid.
And to me, Schneider is not an upgrade on Smitty.
No. He is, but not by much.
So what if we were to go, and I know people think I'm crazy when I say this, what if we were to go to Chicago and get Cam Ward?
Actually, I'm gonna go a different route. What about Corey Crawford?
To me, Crawford is not a guy I trust in the playoffs with where he's at. He's old, he's slow, he's broken down. I'd rather take my chances with Smitty than Crawford and not have to give something up. I mean, if we could take Crawford off waivers or something, maybe, but I don't see the value in trading for him. Unless you can do Smitty for Crawford straight up, which you're not going to do. So that's why I wouldn't do it. But I could see the Flames going with an older guy like, let's say, Cam Ward, Ryan Miller. You know, even a Peter Mrazek, I could see them doing. I've said in the past, I think Mrazek might be a decent option even going forward for Calgary. I could see them doing a guy like that. I actually, of those ones, if we're looking at as a backup role, I would go with Cam Ward because he's a guy that knows the playoffs. He knows crunch games. We're probably, hopefully, not going to play a playoff game, but I would feel comfortable putting him in if we need him.
What about Mick backup?
Curtis McElhaney?
Yeah.
I don't know that McElhaney is going to be worth the acquisition price. He's a solid backup, but there's so many of those out there. You know, I don't know that he would even be any better than going with Gillies. What do you think?
Yeah, it's about the same. I think he's better than like an average backup, but it's like Chad Johnson. It's like, okay.
But why give something up for a guy who's not much better than what we got?
Yeah, like, I wouldn't pay more than, like, a sixth-round pick for that, so. You could, you know, it's like if you really need a body. Like, if you're fully intent on Riddick being your guy, then, you know, and you're just needing a body, then, like, a depth draft pick for just a fill-in guy for, like, four games. I'm not overly enthusiastic either way.
I mean, to me, to give up a draft pick for a guy who's going to play four games, you should be able to bring Parsons or McDonald or Riddick, or even Schneider's look good this year. Give him the four games, unless they're playoff games. Like, you know, we should be able to find somebody to cover those. I bet there's even cheaper options like a Montoya or who else on this list? A Niemi, if you're just looking for a guy to fill the spot on the end of the bench. Maybe it's because of his last tenure in Calgary, but I'm still kind of sour on McElhaney as a goalie.
Oh, he's not doing too badly now.
Yeah, I mean, if he hadn't already been traded recently, I'd say maybe Michael Hutchinson for that sort of backup role of a guy who might play four games. Yeah, I don't know. It's looking at the free agent class this year, there's going to be some interesting goalies out there. A lot of old guys. I mean, we got Smitty, Miller, Ward. So then there's going to be a lot of backup jobs. And I think there's very few pinnacle goalies out there. I've said it before to you, and I'll say it again. I think Talbot may be the Flame starter next year, but I don't think it happens at the deadline. I think it happens July 1.
Yeah, and that very well could be. I think that there could be a trade, though, made with Calgary and Edmonton, but...
If you're going to trade for a goalie, I would almost go either Philly and get Michael Neuwirth.
That would be okay.
Or if you really want to kind of shake it up, go to the Blues and see if you can get Allen off of them.
Yeah, you'd have to give them a lot, though, I think, because they don't really have a lot in the pipeline.
No, but I think Allen's a guy that wouldn't just be a rental. He's a guy that could be in the system as one of your top two next year.
Allen's a weird goalie in that, like, I've seen flashes of him, and you look at him being possibly an elite goalie, and then there are times where it's like, how is this guy in the NHL? And he's just very weird, because, like, there's no real consistency to his game.
But even if you were to bring him in, I don't know what his money is, but even if you were to bring him in as a 1B or even a backup guy?
That'd be fine. It's just... he's kind of one of those guys where you don't really know what he is yet.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's the best way to go, but I just, to me, I wouldn't get some throwaway guy like McElhinney. I think if you want to do it, go for Howard or go for Neuwirth or go for one of these guys that I think we could pick up pretty cheap. I don't know. We'll see what they do there, but that's the biggest question. I would be, let's just say in 7 weeks when the deadline is over, I will be shocked if the Flames still have the tandem of Riddick and Smith. I don't necessarily think Smith is going to get traded because I think it's going to be a hard deal to move.
I think with his contract, especially because it's expiring, that I think like if the Flames were to say go for a forward, it'd be like, hey, instead of offering to eat some of the contract, here's Mike Smith.
And you got to remember, too, the roster limits are lifted after the deadline. So if they need to, they could easily carry three goalies. Tyler LeDuc on Twitter asked us, what do you think about a package possibly including Backlund to the Blues for ROR, yay or nay? And for those that don't know, ROR is Ryan O'Reilly.
I'm 100% against that. Backlund's a better player than O'Reilly.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think Ryan O'Reilly is also a guy who is going to cost a lot of the deadline. And I think that if you look at what the Flames would pay to acquire him, it wouldn't be worth it. I think if you acquire Ryan O'Reilly, you then can't afford Tkachuk. So we have to make a decision. Do you want Chucky or do you want O'Reilly?
Yeah, and frankly, O'Reilly is overrated. And he's been a locker room disaster in the past. And... I really don't like Ryan O'Reilly, and Backlund is an exceptionally good two-way forward. Offensively, he's kind of just okay, but you're not paying him to be like the offensive superstar. You're there putting him there because he's exceptional at shutting other teams down.
Yeah, and I think that that's the key here, that if the Flames were to move Backlund for O'Reilly, we lose a lot of what's made us effective, which is that Backlund-Tkachuk line with whatever winger they put there. Like, I think you lose a big part of this team.
Yeah, and like you look at Jankowski, and like they're trying to groom him into becoming the next Backlund, that very good defensively two-way-ish forward. It's just that right now, Jankowski is not ready to take that role, and he probably won't be for another two seasons. And Backlund's doing a top-notch job and hasn't regressed, so there's not really any urgency to move him. So unless you are getting a clear upgrade where like you're getting a first-line player for Backlund, who's a good first line player, I don't see the point in including him at all.
You can't have all scoring guys either, and I think a big part of Calgary's success has been that they have a line they can put out to shut down other top lines.
True enough.
Speaking of Jankowski, while you bring him up, I want to give him credit. I've been critical of him this year, and in the last month, I've really thought that he's turned his game around this year.
I agree. I think it was just him. Yeah, I think the NHL adapted to Mark Jankowski, and it took him a little while for him to adapt to that adaptation and to find his game. And he's carving out a niche for himself as being a very good, responsible defensive player who can chip in here and there. And his work on the penalty kill has been exemplary, and hopefully he can continue to step it up, and hopefully more of his offensive game starts to emerge.
So we've said, both of us, nay to Backlund plus for O'Reilly, but let us know what you think. Let us know on Twitter or Facebook. What do you think? Yes or no to Tyler LeDuc's proposal? And if you had to pick one of the two, because really long-term money-wise, Tkachuk or O'Reilly, who would you pick? So let us know that. We'd love to hear your thoughts. But to me, I'm not as against O'Reilly as you are. I just don't think he's not a rental. I don't think we can afford him long-term if we want to keep Tkachuk, and I'd rather have Tkachuk.
Yeah. And frankly, Tkachuk, by the way, what are you thinking with his contract?
7 for 7.
Yeah. I'm thinking even 6 years at $7 million.
We'll see. I think the money's going to be 7. I don't really know the years, but I mean, yeah, 6, 7, it's pretty much the same.
Yeah. Like, I don't see it being like 7.5 or anything like that.
I don't know. I mean, as good as Tkachuk's doing this year, you want to see him keep doing well, but at some point it's like, no, stop. You're costing us more money. You've got us into the playoffs. Ease off. Ease off.
Cool your jets, man.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at comparable money, he's a second line winger. And so I think it'll be hard to ask for more money than Goudreau. I think he's going to get it, but I think the money that he's going to get, because Goudreau's making $6,750,000. So I think that you can't make a whole lot more than Goudreau, especially being a second-line guy. And I think that's maybe the ace in the hole the Flames have in negotiation.
I think that Tkachuk, I don't know, I don't see him holding out. Like, his father was renowned for, like, trying to get every penny from his team. And, like, I think at one point he was getting, like, $11 million or a season or something like that. I'm not sure that Matthew Tkachuk's going to be as aggressive with that, because I think that the Flames are going to be selling him on, well, hey, if everybody takes a little less, then we can be Stanley Cup contenders for the next decade type of thing. And I don't know. I'm hopeful that he comes in cheaper than like 7.5, but we'll see.
I've said this to you before, and I'll say it again today. I think if we look, say, 3 years out, Goudreau's not a Flame anymore. I think that the Flames will probably trade him when he's about 27, 28. Tkachuk will take the first line spot. We could still get a good deal for Goudreau. You're not moving him because he's ineffective. I think they'll move him because Tkachuk becomes the number one guy. And Goudreau, I don't want to say he's expendable, but you could, I mean, if you were to trade him now, and I'm not saying trade him now, but if you trade him now, you can get any goalie you wanted. Like, I think 3 years from now, he'll still be an asset where whatever we need, we can get for him.
Yeah. And frankly, I think that the Flames, it would just really depend on what the cap hit is that Goodrow's looking at. Like, if he's looking at like $11 or $12 million, like Patrick Kane or Jonathan Toews, then we should probably not do that. But we'll see. And frankly, Goodrow's going to probably cost in that realm. It's just that the Flames, if they're smart, they should walk away from that.
Yeah, I could totally see them making a deal with New Jersey or Philly teams that, you know, places that he's from in the States, and doing a big deal for one of those guys to bring in the hometown kid.
And, like, here's a boatload of prospects and picks or whatever.
Yeah,
and
I mean, whether we want prospects, who knows where we'll be in 3 years. Maybe we need, like we did last year, we really need a right winger. I mean, even 3 years from now, you can probably get whatever you need in exchange for Johnny Goudreau.
Yeah, and frankly, the team, like, you look at teams and, like, say, take Chicago, who are playing tonight, that, like, realistically, what they should have probably done was trade Jonathan Toews instead of re-signing him. and because he costs way too much, and they could have used that to keep a bunch of their depth, and they probably would be a good playoff team right now. Not necessarily a cup contender, but, you know, a decent playoff team. But instead, they're handcuffed with a bunch of young, crappy players. Like, Strome took his third penalty of the game just a few seconds ago as we're recording. And, like, you know, it's stuff like that that costs that team a playoff spot and is one of the reasons why that they're rebuilding again. And the Flames, if they're smart, is to look at teams like Pittsburgh, like Chicago, like Boston, Los Angeles, and see where they went wrong. And try to adapt to try and avoid the pitfalls that they made. So that way that you can kind of roll over being competitive while not completely bottoming out either.
Yeah, and I think this team, I don't want to say learned from, but I think after the Jerome Ginla deal where we realized that, you know, we really waited too long on that player to move him, I think there might be an appetite to move a guy earlier. These guys in the end are business assets, and as much as you want to get the most out of them, you got to know when to hold them and when to fold them, as they say. You know, you got to know when it's time to give up, not give up on a guy, but when it's time to move him for value. Well, why don't we talk about a guy? I mean, Goudreau's a 3-4 year term before we trade him, but let's talk about a guy who maybe there's some unrest and might be leaving town. And we all probably saw Alan Walsh, the agent for Michael Frolik, went on a bit of a, I don't want to say a Twitter rant, but over the holidays started talking about maybe he doesn't feel that Frolik is in the best company here in Calgary. And we saw him say in a tweet, many people in Calgary have been reaching out asking why Michael Frolik is a healthy scratch. Keeping one of the team's most efficient and versatile forwards in the stands marginalizes and devalues a great team player. Head coach's attempt to run a good player out of town? Question mark. So after that, there's been a... I mean, we've seen Frolik back in the lineup since then. He hasn't been a healthy scratch. It's interesting when the agents get involved. At this point, if I were Calgary, I wouldn't say, well, his agent has, you know, posted this tweet, let's get rid of the guy. I don't think you move him to move him. But I also wouldn't be surprised if they can find value to move him.
Yeah, he's a very valuable player to a lot of teams. And I think that the odds of him being a Flame after the trade deadline are north of zero.
See, I would keep him this year. I think if we're going to go, like you said, deep in a cup run, you need a guy like him who can step up into the second line. I could see that 3M line being a versatile piece for us in the playoffs. He's still got some years left on his deal. He's got this year and next year. I think I'd hang on to him for this year and maybe look at moving him in the last year of his deal next year.
Well, that's the thing. Like, he is a versatile forward, and I think a lot of rebuilding teams would like a Frolik to help teach some of their kids. And, like, that's why, like, if you traded him to either Edmonton or Detroit or any of those type of teams to get assets that you're looking for, I think that'd be a viable thing. And, like, if you trade for a league, you're going to need to get a forward for sure at the deadline. That's a middle six guy.
Well, I think if you trade Frolik, he's a middle six guy. You have to get a middle sixer back. You don't trade him for a prospect or anything like that. I think
no.
Frolik is a hockey deal. It's, you know, forward for forward.
Yeah. Trade the malcontent off for something that you need. And that's
about, you know,
it.
Frolik has always been known to be a pretty good team guy. So I don't even know if, you know, he had any part in his agent sending this, or if the agent was maybe having a little too much holiday cheer, maybe a little too much eggnog, and just went off on his own. But I wouldn't trade Frolik, like I said, just to get him out of town, thinking he doesn't want to be here, he's malcontent. I think right now the only way I move him is in a hockey deal. Otherwise, I'm happy to keep him on the team.
And frankly, like, if the Flames kept him, that'd be perfectly fine. But I think that just based on how the team's operated in the past, that I would be somewhat surprised if he was on the team still after the deadline.
I said this coming into the season, and I still maintain it. I think if you look at our active playing roster, he's probably the most valuable piece we have that we'd be willing to part with.
Yeah, and, like, that's the thing. Like, Frolik's not a bad player, and he would be valuable to a lot of teams. It's not that he's a mediocre guy that you're trying to buy out at the end of the year. It's just that if the Flames were to get something that they value more, then, you know, throwing Frolik in there works for their favor as well. Because it's solving two problems. You have a disgruntled player that you're getting rid of, and you're getting something that you actually need.
Between him and James Neal and Mark Jankowski, that third line's cost us almost $10 million.
Yeah. Well, what I would ideally like to see is a right winger to put on the second line with Tkachuk and Backlund, say like Nyquist, and then have Bennett go back down on the third line with Jankowski and Neal, and that way you have fairly good lines 1 through 3.
I don't know. I think you're right. If I can see Frolik moving, I think of all the forwards on this team, he's probably the only one I can see really moving of having any value. Guys are saying, oh, let's trade Neal, but that's not a contract anybody wants. Nobody wants Smitty. Like, I think of the NHL players here, he's probably the most likely to get moved, but it won't happen until the deadline.
Yeah, and I think that, like, Smith is viable as a trade piece only in that, hey, we need to get rid of salary. Can you take on this contract so that way you're not retaining salary on the contract trade? But
for sure, he gets thrown in, but he's not a valuable trade asset by himself.
No, like honestly, I don't even think you get a 7th round pick for Smith right at this point.
The only reason I can maybe also see them moving for a leak is he's making $4.3 million. And that's money they may want to play with. So moving them out this year gives them that money then to play with in the offseason.
Yeah, I agree. And
especially if they think Tkachuk's going to be expensive.
Yeah. Well, frankly, like you look at a guy like Dylan Dubé, next season he probably could step into Frolik's role and be okay. Like, he's not going to be as good.
I would put him more in Hathaway's role right now. I don't think you go from a guy who can't stay in the NHL to being a third-line guy over the summer.
Well, players develop over time, and, you know.
Yeah, like, but generally there's not that somebody, quickly.
Well, you know, you can insert any of the number of players, like Lazar, like a whole bunch of guys. Like, I could go through, like, 10 names that could possibly be replacements as a third, fourth-line guy.
I think also with the way that Sam Bennett's been improving this year, I could see Frolik being more expendable because I think even money-wise, a lot of his money will probably go to Bennett.
Yeah, I agree.
So, not saying they should trade him. I don't think this agent thing is anything on him, but I think it's definitely, it might open their eyes a little bit more to, well, maybe this guy, it's time to move on from him.
Yeah, I agree.
But Frolik's not going to get you a top-line guy, but he could definitely get you your middle six forward you were talking about.
Yeah. Well, you got to figure that some teams are looking for very good defensive players, and Frolik, to his credit, is a top-tier defensive player. So, you know, if the Flames are able to get a good offensive forward, you know, not great offensive forward, but a decent one instead, that might work.
You were talking about Dubé a minute ago, and we've seen him sort of be a yo-yo this year. He's come up, gone down, come up, gone down again. I think you're right. He's ready for the NHL next year. I think Frolik's been a very important asset for this team, especially when he's a 3M line member. I don't know if I'd necessarily put Dubé as his replacement, but to you, does Dubé look ready this year?
If the Flames were, say, the Edmonton Oilers and not very deep, he would probably be in the NHL still and be fine. You also have to consider that for most of the season he's been playing on the fourth line with not overly skilled players, and he's doing an adequate job. Like, it's really hard for fourth line players to get anything going, really. So it's hard for him to, especially as an offensive player, because he's frankly a top six forward type guy.
Watch it. I think he's been misused on the fourth line because that's not his play style. It'd be like taking Hathaway and putting him on the 3M line.
Yeah. Like, he's a small forward who is a scorer. You know, that just doesn't really mesh well. Like, he's adequate defensively for his age, but you know, you're kind of just wasting his offensive skill. Like, he needs to be at least on the third line or higher for him to be successful. And, like, if you're talking like a mediocre team in terms of depth, Dubé probably would be on the second or third line. With, say, like the Oilers, he probably would be on the second line right now. But, you know, it's one of those situations where he has to learn how to be better, and he's getting time in the NHL to figure that out. But he's also getting reassigned to Stockton because, you know, he also needs to refine his offensive game, and he's not really getting the opportunity up here for that.
I think if I was the coaching staff for the GM, I would probably leave him in Stockton for the rest of the year. I think we have other guys we can call up for especially a short-term assignment. And I think, you know, you tell him come into camp and you're one of the forerunners for a spot. But like you said, you've got to show us you can get a bit better. I think that Dubé will be on the team next year, but I think he just needs some time to mature in the AHL.
Yeah, I agree.
I can see him and Mangiapane both competing for probably, I see two, maybe three holes next year on the forward ranks of this team. And I can see those guys competing for those two jobs.
I agree.
So hopefully one of them will get one of them. The guy I would actually call up next is, and you know I have a soft spot for this guy, but Curtis Lazar, the player who made history this season by being the first NHLer that's known to have asked for a demotion of the minors. How many guys say, hey, coach, send me the minors. I love riding the bus. But he realized what was good for his game, and now there's an article from Eric Francis saying he wants to come back. He thinks he's definitely ready for the challenge as a NHLer, and to me, I think, you know what, Lazar's a good hand. If you're looking for that call-up guy as a third, fourth line guy, maybe Lazar's the guy to give the nod to.
Well, who needs Brad for a living? You just have Curtis Lazar call all the shots. Hey, coach, send me down. Hey, coach, send me up. Come on, let's go.
you just tell him, you tell us when you're ready. We're not going to make any deals for you.
Yeah, we're just waiting on you, man.
That's right. You remember the 60s Batman when they had that red phone that they called Batman with? You have one of those to the GM's office. But, you know, I think if we're giving guys like Quine a shot, if we're giving Buddy Robinson a shot, why not bring Lazar back up, see if he has learned anything. He's looked really good in the AHL this year. He's got 12 goals in 27 total points in 33 games, and he's been named as an AHL All-Star. So maybe he's one of these guys that, you know, he's a good AHL player and never going to be a good NHL player, but maybe he's learned something. I mean, is that not what the AHL is there for?
Well, the thing is that, like, with the AHL, I kind of always look at how close a player is to being a point per game. And usually players, especially ones that have some skill offensively, they tend to be around a point per game. And especially, like, when they're looking like they're ready for a call-up.
He's at 0.82 points per game.
And 27 and 33 is close enough where that's fine. And I think he'd be perfectly fine in the NHL. I don't see him being much more than a third, fourth line guy, even if, like, you know, final product. But we'll see. And I think he has played well enough where he deserves the shot. But, you know, frankly, for the first couple months, he needed to be down there consistently and not have to worry about, oh, I'm going to be up and now I have to be on the top of my game this, that, or the next thing. He could just park it and figure out how to be a good overall forward. And he's showing enough where he does deserve a look. But I wouldn't be in a rush to bring him up either. But I think you'll see him probably before the trade deadline.
And again, I think if you look at this roster, maybe holes for next year, I mean, do you re-sign Hathaway? I think Lazar could maybe take that spot. I think he could take Zarnik's spot.
Well, it depends on how cheap you get Hathaway. Like, if Hathaway's under 900,000, which I think that will be the case, then you just re-sign Hathaway, because
I think you're right that Lazar needed time to play, and the AHL was the right place for him to do that. He sat on the press box most of the year last year. He's not going to get time playing 4 minutes a night, but I think he's a serviceable fourth line guy. And especially for a playoff run when, you know what, maybe there's time in those last couple games where I see it to call guys up and rest some of our top guys. I think Lazar, let's at least give him a look to see if he's developed at all.
Well, also, with him, he's a fast player. And having fast players available to you in the playoffs is always a good idea, just because that's how the NHL's going. And that might make a difference in a game at some point.
Here's a crazy idea, but if the Flames end up moving on from Frolik at the deadline, what about trying a line of Lazar, Jankowski, and Neal?
I'd try it. Why not? It would depend on like what we get as well. Like if we have a legitimate top six forward or whatever in the deadline, then you know you just stick Bennett there. But
yeah, but even then, I think a fourth line of say Ryan, Zarnik, Lazar is still a pretty good fourth line.
Or Hathaway instead of Zarnik, that'd be perfectly fine too.
Yeah, I think that with all the work he's put in, you got to give him a look. You don't have to keep him here, but I think you got to call him up, give him a look, and say, yeah, kid, you're right. You needed the seasoning. Welcome back. Or, you know what, kid? You wanted to go to the minors so bad, we're going to send you back there so you don't miss him. And keep working on it. And as you've said, too, it shows the team's willing to give you a shot if they think you're ready.
Well, frankly, I think with him, a lot of what his problem was the lack of offense in his game. And like, if he's, say, brought up to be a physical banger on the fourth line, like even if his offensive game doesn't translate at all, and he just is being told to, hey, the other team's wearing a jersey, go hit anybody wearing that jersey, then he
if
could
you
be
want
a
that
viable...
though, why not just call up Lomberg?
Lazar's bigger and faster.
Yeah, but that's what Lomberg does already. I think as a third, fourth line guy, you don't need to be a huge offensive power. You know, look at a guy like Jankowski. I think sometimes you just got to be there and not making a mistake. You're playing 5 minutes a night. Just don't screw it up. You know, if you're playing on the top two, for sure. But there's not a lot of fourth line guys we look at and go, wow, this guy's got a lot of offensive prowess. Like, you know, at that point, look at Derek Ryan, right? He's not doing a lot for us offensively or defensively. He's just keeping the game going.
He's not really that far off of his career normals. So, you know, Ryan's doing all right. You know, last year he had 37 points. I think he's on pace for 25. That's not that far off, especially because
no,
he was playing on the second line in Carolina.
Yeah, and I'm not saying you can't get points, but we didn't bring in Ryan and put him on the fourth line. Oh, this guy's going to be a 40-point player. If he gets him, great. But, you know, it's icing on the cake. Matt, why don't we look... We're looking at the current team. Why don't we look a little bit ahead? Next year, the Calgary Flames will be playing another Heritage Classic, but it's not going to be here in Calgary this time at McMahon, nor is it going to be in Winnipeg, the team we're playing. It's in a neutral ground of... Regina. They're going to be playing at Regina's Football Stadium on October 26, 2018. It'll be Calgary versus Winnipeg. I did some research. Do you remember how bitter cold it was for the one here in Calgary?
I was there, so yeah, it was
minus 25 with the wind chill.
Yeah, it was fun.
I didn't want to go and, you know, pay that much to sit way up, so what I did is I moved my TV to the window and sat on the deck. I got the same experience as you, and I could see better. But according to AccuWeather.com, the historical average high temperature for that day is 8 Celsius, and the low is minus 5. So hopefully, if we go by that, much better day for the team. Weird to see it so early in the season, though, October 26th.
Yeah. Well, usually they have one or two that are, like, abnormally early. So it's not that unusual. It's just, it is a little weird, though.
This year we have to go to China. Next year we have to go to Regina. When can we just stay home?
Well, it'll be nice to see. What I'm looking for is the Battle of Atlanta. The Thrashers jerseys with the Atlanta Flames jerseys.
Well, that was going to be my next question. I know you liked them. I thought they were stupid. Do you think the Flames wear another stupid jersey for this game? Do they resurrect the Ronald McDonald jersey again?
I actually really like that jersey.
I know you do.
And, you know, I probably would have switched the red for black in that particular one, but...
Well, if you want that, go buy the Hitman one. That's what the Hitman one was.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that I'm hoping that it's going to end up being like the Atlanta Thrash or Atlanta Thrashers versus Atlanta Flames type thing. But I think that it'll end up being some very retro themed thing.
The Flames have had so much success with the retro reds. I bet they go with the 80s whites.
And that would be extremely lame.
I don't know. I can see...
Like, that would be just kind of a cop-out to me. Like, come on. It's a one-off game. Do something special. Like, you know, like, that'd be boring.
I bet they'd sell a ton of them, though.
Yeah, but that'd be really boring. Like, I don't know. Like, that'd be just really lame. It's sort of like Montreal's jerseys from that game against the Flames at the McMahon. Like, oh, gee, it's your 80s Montreal Canadian jersey. Okay. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
I can't see the Winnipeg fans appreciating the Atlanta thing.
No, I know. It'll be interesting to see. I would probably prefer if the Flames went back into the old-time Calgary jersey well somewhere. Like, even if they went back to the Calgary Tigers, because I think the Tigers had, like, four different jerseys back when, and, like, the Bumblebee-styled one that they took the McDonald's jersey template from. Like, I think there's a couple other designs that they had. So maybe going back to that well might work. Or do something a little different. Like, pick a different team and go for it, you know, like...
If you look at the last couple outdoor games of states, they're not even going with, say, an old team. They're just making up some new vintage look for that team. And I think, honestly, if the Flames don't go with the 80s white, they're just going to make up some random vintage look.
Yeah. Or you could go, you know, appeal to Saskatchewan fans and make a green Flames jersey.
They're not going to wear a green Flames jersey.
Oh, come on. That'd be odd.
If you want to see the Tigers and stuff, it's actually pretty cool. The Hitmen have been wearing all those old Calgary jerseys this year. They're playing what they call the Carell Series. It's the days they got booted out for the Flames from the Dome. And they're wearing jerseys from teams that played in the Carell, which is actually kind of neat. So you can actually see like the Calgary Tigers, the Cowboys even from the WHA. And they're not like putting the Hitmen logo on it. They're just wearing the old jersey.
Yeah. Well, like... To go with the green theme, you know, if you're a Game of
Enough,
Thrones
Matt.
Fan, yeah, if you're a Game of Thrones fan, they add Wildfire, which was green in there, so you know there is some sort of precedence for it. I think I'm offending literally any Calgary Stampeders fan with my statements, so you know I'll just shut up.
Do you want them to wear helmets that look like watermelon too?
Sure, why not.
The other thing I can see them doing, just knowing this organization and their sort of jersey history, is you remember that third jersey with the script font on it where they sort of tried to make it look retro but not really?
Yeah.
I can see them bringing back that thing and going for like a pseudo, not even old, like really old, like the McDonald's jerseys were supposed to look like, but just some random let's take retro pieces and put them together.
Yeah.
And put the script font on it.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that it's going to be something interesting instead of something mundane like the Flames 80s home jerseys. Like, that'd just be boring. Like, just don't be boring. That's all. Like, at least like the Ronald McDonald's jerseys, those were something different. Like, a lot of people didn't like it. You didn't like it. I thought it was kind of neat. I wouldn't have used that particular color scheme, but hey, that's fine. But at least it was different. And, like, a lot of teams, like, they just tend to do really boring prototypical things, and it's just boring.
What if they were to bring back the white 80s jersey for the alumni game?
That'd be fine. Like, I'd even be fine if that became our quasi-third, like, a fourth jersey type of thing. Like,
well, the whole thing is they don't want to haul two uniforms on the road.
But, you know, you could just randomly go on a road trip just wearing the 80s whites for the entire trip.
That's part of the reason that the league changed back to dark at home, because everybody wanted a dark third jersey, and then they needed to haul all these different jerseys on the road. And we don't even know which team's going to be expected to wear light or dark yet, so that's going to influence this decision as well.
Yeah, true enough. What I'd prefer is dark on dark, and that'd be a lot more fun, too. Because you're red versus blue, so, you know, it would work.
Yeah, I don't see the NHL doing it, though.
Yeah. Well, they have done it before. We'll
For
see.
Me, one of the best parts of the Heritage Classic last time was the alumni game. What do you think the probability is that we can get number 12 to suit up, Jerome McGinley?
Oh, I think that's 100%. Definitely 100%. I'd be frankly shocked if Conroy and Aginla weren't there with Shelena.
And it makes you wonder, I mean, we're obviously not seeing a retirement this year. We would have heard about it already. You wonder if maybe the retirement comes after that. The jersey retirement, I mean.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked with that either.
You know, if they're bringing him back. But yeah, no, I can totally see that line of Jerome, Jelena, and Connie again. We're almost done here. I guess the only other thing I wanted to let everybody know of is we've got the Flames bye week coming up at the end of the month, and we're going to do something different for that show. That'll be the show that we record on the 28th. There really won't be any hockey to talk about one game, so we're going to do something different. We want you guys to be the star of that show, so Matt and I can take a bit of our own bye week. So instead of us putting together the whole show and talking for the whole hour, we want you guys to come on with us, be our guest host, talk to us about the Flames, whether it's the current season, whether it's your favorite Flames memory, whether it's your favorite Flame of all time. Come talk to us about something Flames related. If you're interested in joining us, you can either come on the show live, we'll have the ability for you to call in and talk to us, or if you don't want to talk to us, you can leave us a message that we'll read on the show. So we want you guys to be part of that one. And if you're interested, go to our website at firesidechat.ca. Right on the homepage, you'll see a button there that asks you to be part of that bi-week show. And we'd love to get you guys on. There's so many great fans that we have with such great insights. We want to hear from you guys, and it'll be, I think, a very fun show. So join us, get your comments in. We'll be reminding you guys every week until then, but let's have some fun with that one. So, Matt, we didn't do all our predictions over the holidays. There's a lot of games. We missed some, but we'll just start again for 2019. Four games in the docket between now and, well, I guess three games if we don't count tonight's game. Calgary has essentially won this one 4-2 against Chicago. So three-game homestand. On Wednesday, the Calgary Flames take on the Avalanche at a 7:30 start, back to somewhat normal time. Friday, the Flames take on Florida, your other favorite team. And then on Sunday at 7:30 at the Dome, the Flames take on Arizona. Still tickets available. The Flames still haven't sold these ones out. If you want to go to a game, go to seatgiant.ca. Enter the promo code FIRESIDE when you check out. Let them know we sent you, but some really good pricing. I was looking at all three of these games today. Tickets in the lower bowl for about $120. Tickets in the second level, you can get them for as cheap as about $65. So see some great hockey. Hopefully the Flames will annihilate these three teams. It's always fun to go to a game. So check them out, seatgiant.ca. Enter the promo code FIRESIDE. Matt, what do you think for these four games? Or I guess three games.
I think that the Flames ideally should get 6 points, you know, but I think that they'll probably lose to Colorado just because.
So you think that's the only loss for the week?
Yeah.
Beat Florida, beat Arizona. I don't know, Colorado's coming on strong.
Yeah.
I think the Flames will get 4 points, but I think they're going to lose to Arizona. For some reason, they seem to have struggled against Arizona the last couple of years.
Yeah. Could very well be.
But I don't think after the road trip we've seen and probably the fatigue that's set in, I don't think we've got any hope of getting six.
Like, it is every other day, and like the Flames aren't traveling so after tonight, so hopefully they can just kind of take it a little easier and, you know, not be as frantic about things.
Yeah, I mean, if we take a look at the schedule, it's pretty much all home games till the end of the month. We've got Colorado, Florida, Arizona, Buffalo, Detroit at home right till the 18th. They make a quick trip back-to-back on the 19th up to Edmonton, but that's not much of a trip at all. I mean, they'll be back in their own beds that night. Then they get 2 days off. They play Carolina, and then they've got about a week and a half. Their bye week coincides with the All-Star game there. They don't play again after the 22nd until the 1st of February. So I think that's what they're all looking forward to, is that 10-day break.
Yeah, and then they have a two-game trip in on the East Coast with Washington and Carolina, and then they're off for another 3 days.
So some rest is in sight.
Just have to get through all this stuff.
Well, we got three games of the Dome, and I'll talk to you next week as we look at those and really look ahead for the rest of the month for the Flames. It's a short month here.
Yeah, well, hopefully the Flames can continue on their winning ways and keep near the top of the standings one way or the other.
But even if you're not number one, I mean, this team's not falling out of playoff contention unless something bad happens.
Frankly, they've already made the playoffs. Like, if they just go 500 the rest of the way, they'll have, like, 96 points. So, like, they're fine. It's just trying to get, you know, we want to be, like, one of the top-tier teams, not having to take the harder route. Because, like, frankly, like, if in the first round we're playing either Vegas or San Jose, that's a lot tougher than, say, like Minnesota, Vancouver, Edmonton, or any of those other teams that would squeak in. So,
yeah, I don't know if we're going to be number one for the whole season, but I have no doubt that we'll be on the easy road. I think we'll be one of the top teams, and that'll be no problem.
I'm just hoping that they're at the top of the division at the least, so that way they're not facing as hard of an opponent in the first round.
I think that based on the teams behind us and the fact that we've been pretty consistent, I think as long as the Flames keep their consistency up, they'll probably be one, maybe two.
Yeah, because if you look at the standings, like Colorado's third in the Central, and they're tied with Dallas, who's the first wild card team, and then you have Minnesota, Anaheim, Vancouver, and Edmonton that are all within 2 points of eighth. So, you know, like none of those teams really much of a danger, frankly, to the Flames. So, like, I'd rather face one of those, say, six teams than having to play San Jose or Vegas in round one. Let those two teams beat each other up, and then we take the winner.
Well, Matt, have a good week. Enjoy these three games, and we'll talk to you next week.
Have a good one, and as always, go Flames, go.
Fireside Chat is hosted by Dan Stevenson, co-hosted by Matt DeBorg. This episode produced and edited by Peter Marino. Fireside Chat is licensed under a Creative Commons license. For full license details, visit firesidechat.ca.